Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Tiziana Deering. This is a special hour of Radio Boston as we continue WBUR's coverage today of the inauguration of the 46th President, Joseph Biden, and of Vice President Kamala Harris. What a day, Boston. Let's talk about it together. That is Lady Gaga singing the national anthem.
At the twilight's last gleaming.
After an armed insurrection 2 weeks ago intended to stop this inauguration from happening, and during a global pandemic that necessitated a scaled-down affair, the transition of power nevertheless happened. Our nation's first female, first Black, first Asian American vice president took her oath of office.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Then Joe Biden took his solemn oath, took his mask off, and addressed a hurting nation calling for unity.
We face an attack on our democracy and on truth, a raging virus, growing inequity, the sting of systemic racism, a climate in crisis, America's role in the world. Any one of these would be enough to challenge us in profound ways. But the fact is, we face them all at once, presenting this nation with one of the gravest responsibilities we've had. Now we're going to be tested. Are we going to step up, all of us? It's time for boldness, for there's so much to do. And this is certain. I promise you, we will be judged, you and I, by how we resolve these cascading crises of our era. We will rise to the occasion is the question. Will we master this rare and difficult hour? Will we meet our obligations and pass along a new and better world to our children? I believe we must. I'm sure you do as well. I believe we will.
Now, a little later in the hour, we're going to start taking your calls. So warm up your thoughts and get ready to dial 800-423-8255. But for now, Boston Globe national political reporter Jess Biggood is there in Washington covering the crowds, and WBUR political reporter Callum Borchers has been following the events and spoke to our congressional delegation today. So let's welcome them both. Jess, Callum, hey there.
Hi.
Hey, Tiziana.
Jess, I'm going to start with you. I've never been to an inauguration, and I can imagine today was a particularly unusual one. A lot of security, sparse crowds because of the virus. Take us there. What's the mood? What's it like in D.C.?
So the comparison that I hear most commonly among people in D.C. right now is to the time after 9/11. That's the last time that people who have lived here for a really long time remember the streets feeling this locked down, downtown feeling this empty, and this big of a security presence. It is a strange scene. The inauguration itself really felt like the beating heart of Washington, D.C. today, and it was very important to President Biden, Vice President Harris, and their whole administration to show a normal, peaceful transfer of power, to do it outside, to do it on the Mall, to do it in front of the Capitol. But much of the rest of the city, particularly right around the Capitol and right around the White House, feels really, really quiet. When I was downtown earlier today, I saw a couple of National Guard officers in their full uniforms, holding their guns, getting coffee at a little coffee shop. You can't get close to the White House. You can't get close to the Capitol. There are big Humvees and trucks parked everywhere, blocking streets. So this is certainly an inauguration day like no other, but it is one that has gone very smoothly, and one that I think is leaving people in Washington just feeling a measure of relief that after the insurrection, after all of this security has come into the city, there was no more violence today.
So, Kellum, I know you've been talking to the Massachusetts delegation today, and Joe Biden gave quite a speech. Now, we are going to talk on Radio Boston later this hour to Congresswoman Catherine Clark, but across the delegation, what are you hearing? How are they responding to his calls for racial justice, healing, unity?
Well, you know, it was exactly what they wanted and felt they needed to hear, Tiziana, because, you know, some of the members were quite candid in conversations with me about being somewhat uneasy, frankly, about going to Washington today because of what happened there a couple of weeks ago. But they felt that it was important to show resilience in the face of a really challenging time. And I thought that, you know, Congresswoman Lori Trahan, the Lowell Democrat, put it quite eloquently when she talked about just sort of how powerful showing up and being at this inauguration, her first as an elected member of Congress, was. Take a listen to the way she described the moment.
It was overwhelming for all of us, but it was proof that in the face of violent attacks on our democracy, that the will of the American people prevailed, that democracy prevailed. And when Lady Gaga sang and our flag was still there, I mean, she motioned back to the Capitol, and it wasn't lost on any of us, you know, where we were 2 weeks ago as opposed to right now.
And so there you go, almost this surreal moment with a sitting member of Congress drawing inspiration from the pop star Lady Gaga. But there you have it, Tiziana. It was something that really resonated with Congresswoman Trahan, and I think a lot of viewers on TV as well. I think the cameras captured that moment nicely.
Jess, were you able to talk to any people on the street about their reactions? Now, obviously, they couldn't really listen right there at the Capitol in person live, but what are you hearing from people on the street?
I was. So it was interesting. I mean, most years you'd have hundreds of thousands, if not more than a million people amassed on the Mall celebrating a moment like this. And instead, in Washington, what you have is kind of small groups of people that have amassed basically where they can. So earlier this morning, while then President-elect Biden was at a church service, the whole street around it was blocked off so that Biden and his motorcade could get in and out. But I had a chance to catch up with some people who had formed a little crowd kind of as close as they could get to that. And there was one man I spoke to who said that he'd been coming to presidential inaugurations ever since Nixon was inaugurated. He's lived in the D.C. area that long. And he's never experienced one like this, but it was still important for him to be here. And I watched him kind of raise his smartphone in the air as Biden's SUV came out and quietly say, "Hi, Mr. President." So people are still finding ways to celebrate amidst all this. And it's still a really meaningful day here, even if it's not what people have become used to for an inauguration over the years.
Cal, any sense whether today, I mean, so listen, there is pomp, there is circumstance, there is ceremony, and it is essential to the transition of power in our democracy. Any sense that it going safely, smoothly today, Cal, will help begin a transition to a more unified country? Have you heard any comments about that from others you've talked to today?
You know, I mean, if folks were pleased, for example, to see the Vice President Mike Pence step up and perform some of the handoff duties that we would customarily see from the president himself, because, of course, Donald Trump chose not to participate. And so that was heartening for some. We saw, you know, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell exchanging gifts, giving the flags that were flying over the Capitol during the ceremony. I mean, sort of all that pomp and circumstance, as you said, that was all nice. I think, though, and keep in mind, we have an all-Democratic delegation. I mean, speaking with them, I think what they're actually more heartened about is the more substantive change of having the White House, having control of the House of Representatives, and also now controlling the Senate after the Georgia runoffs, because, of course, Kamala Harris will now be able to cast the tie-breaking vote if the Senate is deadlocked. I mean, that, I think, is what they believe is really going to change the direction of legislating in Washington, not any of the flowery, polite things that people said today, because, you know, tomorrow you can go back to your partisan warfare, and we all hope, look, that there will be a sort of an attitude shift on that front. But I think that, you know, more so than anything that was said, just the different makeup of the legislative bodies and the White House is really what people are looking to.
So just to that point, you know, this morning as former Vice President Trump left Washington, he became the first president since John Quincy Adams to skip an inauguration. He flew to Florida. But before doing so, he reminded the world of what he called his historic vote totals. 74 million voters voted for him. Some believe the lie that the election was stolen. Did you hear and see Trump supporters on the streets of D.C. today? And what was their mood, their reaction? What are they saying?
So in my trip through the city today, I actually didn't. There were obviously concerns about Trump supporters or even kind of more far right militia groups showing up in Washington D.C. today, and there was a bit of a protest last night. A little further away from the White House, outside of Comet Ping Pong, a place, a pizzeria that became sort of the epicenter of this conspiracy theory a few years ago. That was a reminder, I think, that the conspiracies that people believe have not gone away. And that was something that I think President Biden spoke to in his address today when he talked about the importance of truth. He never actually mentioned President Trump by name, but in talking about the idea that facts have been distorted, manipulated, even made up to keep certain people in power, that I think was a rejoinder from Biden to the kind of politics that Trump has practiced over the past 4 years, and a plea, I think, to much of the country to unify around not even specific political ideas, but by basic commitments to fact, to truth, and to healing.
So I actually want to play some sound to follow on to that. This is President Biden in his address today, talking to those who disagree with him.
All those who supported our campaign, I'm humbled by the faith you've placed in us. To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. And if you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America. The right to dissent peaceably within the guardrails of our republic is perhaps this nation's greatest strength. Yet hear me clearly. Disagreement must not lead to disunion.
Callum, directly reaching across the aisle there, and Joe Biden has a history of being known for working well in Congress across the aisle. Is there hope that that kind of message of reaching across, of unity, of we can move forward and disagreement can be democratic, small d, is that going to resonate?
Well, I think that there is some genuine hope that that will be the case. I mean, Biden, as you say, he's been around long enough to understand that he's not going to win everybody over. And by the way, he's going to have some disagreement within his own party, because we know that he was a more moderate candidate than some Democrats would have preferred. They certainly prefer him over the alternative of reelecting Donald Trump. But, he's going to get some pressure from the left to go farther on, say, health care or canceling student loan debt. I mean, these are the things that are going to be contentious on both sides of the aisle. And I think that really what he's getting at there is just changing the tone in Washington and to be able to work together, not necessarily always come to an agreement. But, what we saw 2 weeks ago at that same location was the extreme consequence of overheated rhetoric that we've had for the last 4 and 5 years in politics. And I think that is what he is really hoping that we can get away from.
Jess Biggood, before we let you go, any parting remarks from you? Anything you're going to be watching for in particular?
I think one thing that really struck me today was the fact that Biden didn't use his speech to articulate a very specific series of policy items that he wants to get through, which is a departure from what he's done in recent days. I mean, he set some specific goals, 100 million vaccines in the first 100 days, schools getting reopened by fall, things like that. He used today to make a broader appeal for unity and healing, saying politics doesn't have to be a raging fire destroying everything in its path. And he set the specifics aside. That's what's going to be there for the days to come. And I think the question is, by setting a tone today, will that make it easier for him to get some of those specifics done?
All right. That is Boston Globe national reporter, political reporter Jess Bidgood, joining us from Washington. Jess, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Callum Borchers, I know you're going to stay with us. I'm going to go to a break in a second, but before I do, I want to pick up our first call at 800-423-8255. Kay is on the line. Kay, where are you from and what's on your mind?
Yeah, Chelmsford. I'm just impressed, and I'm anticipating a reviving nation, a nation with hope, a nation that embraces irrespective of where we all come from. A nation that respects the heterogeneity of the people in the land, our differences, and bringing inclusivity at play. A nation that looks at healing and joy in the morning, like the president quoted from the scripture, joy comes in the morning. So it's like forgetting the dark night we all left behind us. And to do it together, irrespective of party, irrespective of our demographic disparity or anything that might divide.
Thank you, Kay.
So we all
Kay, that's
have
a lovely faith, call.
Hope.
Thank you, Kay. So Kay from Chelmsford giving us some wonderful notes that we think President Joe Biden wanted us to hear and embrace as well. Callum Borchers is with us. Callum, you're going to stay for the rest of the hour, right?
Looking forward to it.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. All this hour, we are talking about today's inauguration of the 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden, how it's reverberating around the country, our region, and for you. That is the U.S. Marine Band playing Stars and Stripes Forever there. Now, one of the highlights from today's ceremony was Harvard alumna Amanda Gorman, the youngest inaugural poet in U.S. history, 22 years old. And she read her poem, The Hill We Climb. Here's just a bit of it.
The new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
As we reflect on the new dawn she's talking about there, we want to hear from you. How are you responding today? Did you hear what you needed to hear? Is this a happy moment for you, a sad moment, a confusing one? What are you looking for next? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And don't forget in your calls about the historic moment when Vice President Kamala Harris made history in her swearing in. So we've got a couple of guests you know already from listening before the break that WBUR reporter Callum Borchers was with us. I also want to welcome now Marie St. Fleur, who is a former Massachusetts state representative and now a principal at St. Fleur Communications, also the CEO of a cannabis company. Marie, hey there.
Wonderful to be with you. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you too, Marie. Callum, we've still got you, yes?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Marie, I'm going to start with you. How would you describe your feelings today?
Well, I have to tell you, Tiziana, I sat here and cried like a baby, honestly, on a number of levels for me that this was so important. I always tell people, you know, I'm Haitian American, so I was born under a dictator and had the blessing of being able to travel, to immigrate here to this country that has opened its arms in this neighborhood here in Upham's Corner, that helped rear me. And so the way the country was going was very frightening to me, if you're coming from that experience. Second, the idea that you, for the first time, you have a woman leading in this country from the very top, one of the very top positions in this country is amazing. And it's a Black woman. It's a woman of South Asian descent. It's a woman whose parents are immigrants. Again, pulling in all the various strings that we as a country have been struggling with for centuries. To know that women will lead from not from behind like Eleanor did, not from behind, you know, like you know, our current, our former first lady, you know, Michelle Obama did, or you know, Nancy Reagan did. They all were leading, by the way. And so we're going to have a woman in the room with different social, cultural, racial experience to help broaden and co-create a future that is more inclusive for all of us. So yes, and I got to tell you, and I had a man who just put it, Bazan, who's a Catholic, who's, you know, is the faith, you know, religious order that I follow, mm-hmm. that I know believes in what he's talking about. What a, you know, in less than an hour from like 10 o'clock this morning to 11 o'clock this morning, what a shift for this country. So I'm grateful. It filled me up. I'm hopeful, but I'm also very practical about the challenges that both of them are facing.
Marie, I mean, you've said so much there, and it is so moving when you put it that way. We pulled a bunch of different things that the president said during his inaugural address. It makes me think of one of them, so I'm going to pull it here where he talks about democracy prevailing.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day. A day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious, democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
Callum, that will of the people being heard and being heeded, that was a tortured process this time. What went through your head when you heard him say that?
Well, I think just that, Tiziana, that it was so tortured because it's the kind of statement that might seem kind of canned in a typical inaugural speech. And this time it was really meaningful because we all know not only how difficult the last 2 weeks have been since the insurrection at the Capitol, but really ever since election night, when first of all, we didn't have a clear winner. And then in the days afterward, when we finally did have a resolution, you had a president who refused to concede and then spent the next several months lying to his supporters and claiming that falsely that he had won the election. And so, you know, it was kind of one of those days in that moment and others when things that used to seem so rote suddenly seemed special. For example, a highlight for me, Tiziana, was just seeing some of the other former presidents show up today. You had former President Clinton, former President Obama, former President Bush, 43. Who were there and they showed, I thought, some, you know, genuine camaraderie among themselves and were catching up with other lawmakers who they know well. And none of this would be unusual except for what we have witnessed in recent months and years. And so I guess what I'm saying is that I appreciated it anew today.
Let's go to the phones. I want to grab a quick call here. We've got David on the line from Lexington. David, go ahead.
I vividly remember 4 years ago, celebrating in a bar, and then Trump turned out to win, and it just felt horrible. This morning, when I saw Joe Biden take the oath, I had a reaction I hadn't expected. My eyes just welled up with tears. I was so happy and relieved.
David, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. We still have with us Callum Borchers and Marie St. Fleur. I know the two of you are going to stay with us for the rest of the hour, and I know you know I'm going to take a break from you now. Thanks for waiting, because we do have an opportunity to turn back to Washington and welcome Massachusetts Congresswoman Catherine Clark. Congresswoman, thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, it's good to be back with you.
So you may have just heard our caller David from Lexington talking about tears in his eyes. You know, the inauguration is so important as a ceremony in our country. And wow, this year, one, honestly, Congresswoman, in question, potentially, a couple of weeks ago. Do you feel at the end of the day that this inauguration fit the moment that it needed to?
I thought it fit the moment beautifully. And there were several points where I had tears in my eyes as well. I didn't expect to have the reaction that I had to hearing the Star Spangled Banner and having that moment of thinking about that just a few weeks ago, we weren't sure if that flag would still wave. And yet there we were, on the very spot where members of that mob attacked our Capitol and tried to interfere and overthrow our fair elections. And we had made it with our democracy and elections intact. And it really was just a moving moment. And I agree with the previous speaker that those things that we have always watched inaugurations do took on such significance today and gave me such hope that the last 4 years will become an aberration. And the very hard work ahead of us will be done with truth and purpose, and that we will find our way through this time to a better and more perfect union.
What is something that this Congress, now I understand we will now have, and we didn't expect this maybe a month ago, but we will now have a fully Democratic Congress. What is something that's possible on that agenda that moves the country forward and creates the opportunity for that more perfect union? I'm sure not everything on the agenda does open up the doors to a more perfect union. So where do you see that potential most?
I really see that the potential that is there is to start by addressing this pandemic and to not only make sure that we are helping President Biden have these 100 million vaccinations in the first 100 days so that we can crush this pandemic, but also meeting the moment. This pandemic has revealed to us so many of the inequities that we knew were there, and it has brought them into stark relief. So we will work to expand health care and to end health care disparities for communities of color as we work to end this pandemic. And we're going to meet this moment of racial reckoning and climate justice and economic inclusion in a very profound way. And we have so many challenges. The suffering and the loss is very real. But I took from the ceremony today that the promise is one of progress and one that we will find our footing after 4 very difficult years and start again to make progress and to make those ideals we talk about of liberty and justice for all come true. And I know that my commitment to this work, to working for the American people, has never been higher. And I feel that we are going to have great opportunity to be bold and meet these challenges head on and set a course of greater unity and equity in our country.
I love that hopeful note, that positive note, that unity note. I think all of us as voters, as Americans, have hanging in the back of our heads how to navigate as a country these next few weeks, especially in the tension between the call for accountability and the call for unity. I find myself thinking a lot, Congresswoman, about processes of truth and reconciliation. First, there is a truth telling about what happened, and then a process of reconciliation. Can we do truth and reconciliation right now? Is it necessary to do it? I mean, how are we going to get through these next few weeks and stay together?
It is necessary. And, you know, the truth will be our guide. But we have to have that. We have to have accountability. We have to have the truth be told and set the record straight. And, you know, I think that as often is the way, the youngest person on the stage with a speaking role, Amanda Gorman, she gave us the words that we need in her exquisite poem. And she said, "For there is always light, if we only are brave enough to see it, and if only we are brave enough to be it." And that's where we are. We have to be brave enough to be it, to be that light that demands truth, that demands this moment of racial justice, that demands that we work urgently to address all the inequities that this pandemic has brought into stark relief for us. So we're going to do that. Amanda gave us the words. President Biden and Vice President Harris are going to give us the guidance and the policies. And we have to find it. You know, democracy is not a spectator sport. It is going to take each and every one of us in our own spheres of influence, with our own families and friends, to help our country really fulfill the promise of our democracy and of equality. And it's a huge challenge, and there are going to be hard times ahead. But I believe that the events of 2 weeks ago at the Capitol are going to be a turning point for how we create a honest government that is based on science and integrity, and that we guard it just as we have guarded our democracy.
You know, I was thinking and watching the inauguration today that the coronavirus just looms large over all of it. And there was this really striking moment when President Biden said that his first act of president would be to ask everyone right then to take a moment and pray for the more than 400,000 people who have died and the family members who have lost them. I struggle with how to ask you this question. The best way I can think to ask it was the coronavirus at the inauguration today too? And were you aware of it, and how were you thinking about it?
Absolutely. You know, that very grim milestone of 400,000 Americans who've lost their lives to this pandemic did cast a long shadow over where we are as a country and this inauguration. But what gives me renewed optimism and hope is that we have a president and a vice president who know that their number one job is the security of the American people. And that is going to start by restoring their health, addressing this pandemic, and then not just moving us back to the status quo, but creating an economy that includes more of us and includes people who have been left behind. And that is the promise of today. And that is why, for the first time in a long time, I am feeling hopeful that we can do this, and we can do it quickly, and we can restore that belief that when this country puts its mind to something, as, you know, as difficult as ending this pandemic, it can be done because we work together and we listen to experts and we trust in science and in truth. And all of these elements have been missing from the former administration. And today I truly am filled with gratitude and relief that we are going to be able to once again move forward together.
And that is Massachusetts Congresswoman Catherine Clark. Congresswoman, thank you for making time for us today. I appreciate it, and be well.
Thank you. You as well.
Still with us are Callum Borchers and Marie St. Fleur. Marie, let me just take a second. We'll go to a break in a minute, but let me take a second to get your reactions to what we heard from the Congresswoman.
I agree with what Congresswoman Clark has to say. One left me with is we cannot go back to the status quo. And I embrace that totally. The status quo is what got us here. And what I'm encouraged about is you have two people leading the country who are going to interrogate some of the challenges that we've glossed over, not just during Trump, but prior to Trump. So I am so glad that we're going to continue to really seek out the truth, because for us to move this country forward, we have to stop talking about the multiple Americas. And what I am excited about is that what makes this day so, another reason this day is so precious is that what President Biden did was he reset the vision for America today. Because I think he reset the vision by, so we weren't focused on specific policies, but he was inviting us into the vision of who we are and who we could be. And by inviting us in terms of who we are, looking at the better angels that have always guided us, but also the challenges that have all that we've escaped from facing. And he's asking us to face those challenges so that we can continue to move forward. So I think he invited all Americans in, and those who feel disenfranchised for various reasons, whether it was because of race, whether it was because of gender, whether it was because of economic distress, whatever those issues are, he invited us into that vision today. And then I know that they're asking us to co-create, to co-create what tomorrow could look like. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But he believes that we can do that. And I agree with him. Democracy is about we the people.
Let's pull Callum in here too. Callum, briefly, and then I'll go to a call.
Sure. Yeah, I think, Marie, that's really beautifully put. And I think it's a good reminder that as we talk about, a return to normalcy, that may sound nice to many, but not to all, because normal before the pandemic, let's say, was still not working for many Americans. And so I think that what you heard from Assistant Speaker Clark there is that, her caucus wants to be more ambitious than that. Yes, it's nice to have, in her view, a president who is going to, govern in a mode that, has more decorum, let's say. But that's not enough. Like, you can celebrate that today, but then there's a very ambitious agenda that they want to roll out on healthcare, on the environment, and that's really what is coming next.
All right. Our lines are full, so although we have to go to a break, let's grab a quick call first. We've got Arlene on the line from Peabody. Arlene, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It is a beautiful day today. I am so elated. I watched on my computer all day long, all the festivities and everything that took place, but most of all, the variety, the diversity, everything that was in that inauguration. And we're back on course, which is, as Marie said, and as having a Dominican father who came from a dictatorship, how scary it was last week. So it's a beautiful day and the sun is shining and I am so grateful.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I am Tiziana Deering, and today we're continuing WBUR's coverage of the inauguration of the 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden, and his Vice President, Vice President Kamala Harris. That's the U.S. Marine Band playing today at the inauguration. Still with us are our guests, WBUR's Callum Borchers and Marie St. Fleur, a former Massachusetts state representative and now a principal at St. Fleur Communications. Lots of calls. I'm going to go straight to the phones, and then I'll turn back to our guests, 800-423-8255, to tell us how you're thinking about the day. We've got Paul on the line from Somerville. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, Biden was not my first choice because I didn't think he was a fighter. These are the same Republicans who enabled a guy who lied every day. They encouraged the attack on the Capitol. They even said Biden didn't win. He's an old school Democrat who is used to shaking Mitch McConnell's hand, clapping the other Republicans on the back. That's not going to work. Mitch McConnell will oppose him at every single turn, and so will the Republicans. If he's going to get anything done, undo the damage that Trump did, he's going to have to fight them, and I'm not sure he will.
All right. Thanks for that call, Paul. Let's pair Paul with Solomon, who's calling from Everett. Then we'll go back to our guests. Hi there, Solomon. Solomon, are you there? Okay, we'll see if we can pick Solomon up later instead. So strong words there from Paul Kallenborscher saying, I am not convinced that this is the man for the moment. So far, we've heard a lot of positive reaction today. What's your thought about what Paul had to say?
Well, I think it's a concern that a lot of Democratic voters will have. I mentioned earlier that there were plenty of folks who preferred, a more liberal candidate in the primary. And I take it that Paul is one of those voters. And I think that one of the early tests that we'll see, for example, remember that, while the Democrats do control the Senate with the tie-breaking vote, they still don't have a filibuster-proof majority. Most bills to pass, you still need to get some Republican support to get to the at least 60 votes to avoid a filibuster. And so he's going to, just realistically, going to have to work across the aisle to some some degree to pass much of his legislation. A notable exception, however, could be his tax agenda. And remember, he wants to roll back many of the Trump-era tax cuts. For example, he wants to raise the corporate tax rate back up to 28% from the 21% that it is right now. And he could do that through budget reconciliation, one of those super nerdy Washington terms. But what it means is if you attach it to the budget, you can push it through on a party line vote. That's how Republicans passed the Trump tax cuts, for that matter, 4 years ago. And so I'm curious whether he will play hardball in that way, or, to Paul's point, will he be so married to the idea of reaching across the aisle that, he avoids that kind of legislative maneuvering and really tries to get Republicans on board for everything he does? Time will tell, but I think that's one of the early tests.
Marie, do you have anything you want to respond to there, or thoughts you want to add?
I would add that you've got two creatures of the Senate leading the House, leading the country right now. So is it going to be difficult? Yes. Should we be concerned? Yes. Do I think that he is skilled and will use every tool in his toolbox to move the agenda forward? Yes. But most importantly, there are 81 million people in America are woke now. I mean, they've been sitting on the sidelines for many years waiting for everybody to come and rescue us. And they've decided, you know what? Democracy is about us rescuing ourselves. They're not going away quietly either. And that, I think, is an important tool that he's going to be able to use in every state in this country to move the agenda.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Maya on the line from Littleton. Maya, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I am thrilled that we're making this transition, and so far so good. It's been peaceful today. I am a global citizen, an American born, first generation from two Holocaust emigres, refugees. I love both Biden and Harris and a lot of what they're saying and standing for. The one thing that really struck me, though, which may not be a common thought, is that the world is shifting. And I feel like America needs to stop thinking of itself as a golden child so much and start being more a kind of equal player with other great democracies like India and parts of Europe and parts of South America, and stop kind of having this self-importance that we do need to keep striving for incredible democratic vision and actualization. And yet at the same time, I feel we need to become a much more conscious part of a world, a global citizenship. And that's all I wanted to say, along with a hallelujah. I am so glad they're in there. And let's all get involved and stay involved, or let's, if we're already involved, let's get even more involved.
Maya, that's great. Thank you for that call. I appreciate it. I'll grab one more voice to go alongside Maya. Let's talk to Hussein in Weston. Hussein, go ahead.
Yes, hi. My question is essentially about foreign policy. And, you know, when I was listening to President Biden, I found that there was a pointed absence about anything really to do with foreign policy. Do you feel that that is because we really have so much of a chaos and so much at hand domestically that there hasn't been much attention to this? Or, you know, is it in some ways an abdication of, you know, America's leadership internationally?
Thank you for the call, Hussein. So really interesting pairing of calls there, too, with Hussein saying, you know, I'm concerned that this speech indicates an abdication of America's role, but Maya saying America might need to begin to see itself as a side-by-side partner rather than that out front role. I'd like to get reactions from both of you. Callum, I'll jump over to you first, maybe starting with Hussein's question about why was there a lack of foreign policy in this speech?
I think it's a great question. We've seen sort of this roller coaster over, I would say, the last 20 years, right? Because, you know, in the early 2000s, the economy is roaring. And then, of course, you have, you know, 9/11, and there's an incredible focus on foreign policy all of a sudden. And then the roller coaster goes back the other direction when you have the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, and we look sort of more inward again because we sort of have to take care of our business here at home. And right now, I think we're in this sort of, you know, tense in-between where we're dealing with a global pandemic, right, that sort of by definition requires working across borders. And we see that one of the first actions that President Biden is going to take today, in fact, is to rejoin the World Health Organization and to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. So you do see this sort of international focus on the one hand, but at the same time, we have this, you know, pandemic hitting 400,000 death toll here at home in the U.S. We have our own economy to work on. And I think that this new administration has one of the most difficult balancing acts, foreign and domestic, of any administration coming into office, in certainly in my memory.
So, Marie, there's Callum talking about the balancing act, and we had Maya saying, and maybe with a different posture globally. Do you agree with Maya on that? And what are your reactions?
So, I agree that we have a lot to take care of home right now to stabilize ourselves and figure out how we move forward, because so much has happened in the past 4 years to really impact our relationships abroad. And so first we have to get our ship in order, and we're doing that. But he signaled that. He has signaled that with what you've just indicated in terms of him rejoining a lot of organizations that we pulled out of. And so I think America does play a leadership role, and it will continue to do that. I mean, that's why we're that city on a hill. The posture in which we do that, I think, had begun to expand, or at least to play out under Obama, right? Where we're not going to go into events alone, that where we're going to work with our partners in order to do that. I think that is a posture that we need to regain again. We can lead in a more collaborative way. And I think that's perhaps is what the caller was speaking about. We don't need to go bullheaded alone. We need to be able to do that with our other partners and respect what they bring to the table. And I think that had started under Obama.
So, Callum, I want to bring this home now, and I'll ask you briefly and then Marie too. What are the steps forward for a unified Commonwealth of Massachusetts as we begin in this new administration?
Well, I think, you know, here in the Commonwealth, our delegation is probably more liberal than the rest of the country. And so I think that we are going to be one of the, you know, sort of focal points for this tension between the very progressive wing of the party and the more moderate wing of the Democratic Party that Joe Biden represents. And I will tell you, I was heartened by a conversation I had recently with our Senator Ed Markey, who, of course, is one of the authors of the Green New Deal. And I was asking him about the prospects for that bill, because keep in mind, many Democrats, including the new president, actually don't fully support it. And what Markey said was, you know, I'm excited for Joe Biden's climate proposal, which is this $2 trillion proposal, to get a fair hearing. And he thinks there's a chance to pass that through Congress, which is now controlled by Democrats. Now, that Biden climate proposal is far less ambitious than the Green New Deal. But it was striking to me that Markey said he was excited about it. In other words, he wasn't saying, I'm going to hold out for Green New Deal or bust. He seems willing to compromise there. And so what I'm watching to see is whether our very progressive Massachusetts Democrats go along with that line of thinking and saying, you know, the half a loaf that we can get from the Biden administration is better than nothing, or will they really be hardliners? Markey seems willing to do some compromising there, seeing what others will do.
All right. And actually, we're going to have to end there. That is WBUR's Callum Borchers. We also had Marie St. Fleur, former Massachusetts state representative, now a principal at St. Fleur Communications. Callum, Marie, thank you.
Great to be with you, as always.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you both.